The AutJet Business Show is your gateway to expert business advice and real-world success stories. Each week, a different leader in the business world will share their tips, insights, and lessons, offering you practical advice to navigate your entrepreneurial journey. Whether you have a business idea or are just starting out or looking to elevate your existing business, the AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Ensure you get these transformative conversations live on Thursdays at 6 p.m. or find the podcast at highfm.com. Let's build your business empire together.
The AutJet Business Show is brought to you with the compliments of Fstage. Let them bring your corporate event to life and make it unforgettable.
Let Fstage make your vision a reality. As your trusted technical partner, we deliver top-tier lighting, cameras, sound, visuals, and all technical elements for high-level corporate events, conferences, gala awards, ceremonies, and year-end functions. Elevate your next event with our expert services. Contact Fstage at 011-887-1400 and let us bring your event to life and make it unforgettable.
Welcome, welcome. It's Thursday again, and you're listening to the AutJet Business Show. I'm David Zeidel, and tonight we're going to be talking to Pablo Fatidis. Welcome, Pablo.
How are you doing, David? Lovely to be with you and all your listeners.
Great. Thank you.
Looking forward to the conversation.
Thank you. Just before we get to the chat with you, I always give a little bit of a business story. And today's business story is going to be around Henry Ford. And what you might not have known about Henry Ford is he actually started two businesses before his actual Ford business took off. He first started Detroit Auto Company, and that was in 1899. And then he created the Henry Ford Company in 1901. And they both collapsed, one due to high costs and poor quality, and maybe because there was a mismatch between the businesses and what the customer really wanted. But he was undeterred, and in 1903, he created the Ford Motor Company, and he used the lessons that he learned, and that's where he introduced something unique, and it was the assembly line, and he created the Model T, and that actually revolutionized manufacturing in general, and specifically cars. He made cars that were now affordable for millions of people. And coming from two failures, he then became a billionaire. And so successful was the business that it still exists today. So what's the lesson for us behind all of that? It's early failures don't necessarily mean it's defeat. It's the data that you collect from the failures that help you break through with what you're doing in the future. And it reminds me of a quote that I really love, and it says, "You don't drown by falling in the water. You drown by not swimming once you've fallen in the water." And I think tonight, Pablo is going to take us through understanding how to swim in the rivers or in the lakes or in the seas or the oceans of business. And who is Pablo Fatidis? He's the co-founder and CEO of Auric. Pablo is an entrepreneur, investor, speaker, and he spent the last three decades building, scaling, and most importantly, exiting businesses. And he's helped other owners turn their companies into real assets. As I said, he's the co-founder and CEO of Auric, where his work focuses on helping private businesses deepen value and prepare for both growth and then the eventual exit. Pablo is also an author of two books, which is Sweat, Scale, and Sell. And that's what his focus is going to be on the talk tonight, because the sweat is doing the work yourself. The scale is growing the business. And the most important thing is then being able to sell it, because it's now an asset. And it's around working on the business, not only in the business. He's also got a follow-up book, Reset, Rebuild, and Reignite. And hopefully we're going to get some of the lessons that he gives in the books, besides other things. He's a regular keynote speaker. He's a media commentator and a workshop leader, bringing practical, story-led approach to topics like succession, value creation, and scaling. Pavlo draws on hands-on experience, starting, turning around, and selling multiple business. And today, we'll explore how founders should think about building a business that can run eventually without them, and their common pitfalls in succession and sale, and some of the simple steps that maybe people can take to increase their business value. So Pavlo, welcome to the program. And I want to find out from you, really, how did you get into the business of helping other businesses?
David, I started a couple of businesses at school. You know, I was raised in a very entrepreneurial family. My parents were people who could not find work in corporate life. They could not find work in government life, like many others. So to put a roof over the head and to feed family and educate kids, my dad was an importer, wholesaler, distributor. And that really brings to life the art of trading, understanding how to buy something, negotiate, find markets for it, negotiate again, and then sell it. So I started a few businesses at school at a young age, obviously very encouraged by especially my father. And straight after that, I think I was probably the last person in South Africa ever to have to do 2 years of military service. And I finished school very young. So with very little maturity, not knowing what to do, I was sent off to military service and fortunately found myself in the Navy. And there in the Navy, in the camps, in the barracks, call it what you will, was a market of men with money in their pockets and very little to do with it. And through that, I created a couple of businesses that built on the early stage experience. And that's, I think, where the interest began. It began with trading.
Now, it's interesting because you make it sound like, okay, you were there and you made use of the position, but there were hundreds and thousands of others in the exact same position and they didn't start a business. You did. So it's obviously, as you explained from your parents, you had that original, what we might call the entrepreneurial mindset. And when I spoke to you earlier, you were talking about the three forces to change mindset. Would you like to talk about those?
Yeah, I think, you know, look, you know, mindset is a really interesting thing because we all learn in the same way as a species. And, you know, I listened to your story about Henry Ford. He certainly went through this process himself. And the way that we learn something is we always start in a period of believing we can just simply do it. And we call that unconscious competence. We all begin there. And if you think to your very, very earliest, most memorable experience, and that's probably when you were first taught how to drive. As a kid, you would have looked at your parents and thought, well, how hard can this be? You know, they drive me to school and back every day. Driving's easy. You know, mom, dad do it without even much effort at all. That's called unconscious competence. And that's where we all start in everything we do, whether it be in business or whether it be in cooking or whether it be in sport or writing or poetry or a musical instrument, it really doesn't matter. And then what happens is you get into that driver's seat and now you have to drive. And in the good old days, most of us, I believe, learned to drive with a ship stick. What's the South African expression? Manual. It was a manual car. And you ground through the gears. It felt really hard. There was terror when you had to parallel park. And that's an important phase of learning because that's called conscious incompetence. You suddenly realize you don't know how to do this thing. And through that, you then make an effort to learn. And very quickly, 6 months later, or some of us 6 years later, depends on who you are and how you drove and what you drove, you've more or less figured out that you've had this under control. You knew how to drive. You knew how to move through the gears. You knew how to parallel park. You knew how to get onto and off a freeway or highway. But it did take effort, and it took a lot of conscious effort. And that is a phase we call conscious competence. Until almost all of a sudden, it became second nature. And that phase is referred to as unconscious competence. And it is remarkable because in many ways, it's almost like the elixir of action. You want to be there. You want things to be second nature. You want them to be unconsciously intuitive. Yet that's where people get stuck. And if you allow yourself to enjoy the comfort of unconscious competence, the likelihood of you getting to a point or to a place beyond where you are in life across any sphere, but especially in business, is massively diminished. So the question comes, how do you break that? Because that's really the art. And there are a couple of things. The first is, I would recommend to anybody, go and learn a form of martial arts. Because there's no sharper lesson than when you step into a ring and you're going to spar with a colleague and you have ideas in your mind. Those ideas in your mind cloud your judgment of the present moment that you find yourself in. And very often experienced people who've been doing it for years get taken out by someone who's less experienced because they had preconceived ideas of that environment or the person in front of them. And there's a lovely expression that's referred to as shoshin, beginner's mind, empty mind. And Carl Gustav Jung, who was a psychologist, tutored under Freud for many years and then broke away and formed his own branch of psychology, speaks very often, spoke often about the precious gift of doubt. And in many ways, the way that you avoid the comfort of finding yourself in unconscious competence is to always, in everything you do, embrace a 5% precious gift of doubt. It keeps your curiosity alive, and it helps you look at things differently, despite the fact that you might repeat those actions again and again and again. It's how incremental improvements yield a constant growth process, both in yourself and in the art of what you're doing.
So where are you trying to get to? So just to recap a little bit for the listeners, where you're saying your first stage, and you gave the analogy of driving a car, is unconscious incompetence. Then you went through and you said conscious competence, and then you get to unconscious competence. And I want to know, and then you said you have to embrace that 5% doubt for curiosity and grow forward. Is there a term for that? And kind of what are we aiming for? Is that stage four? But before we get to that, and before you answer that, we've got to go to an ad break. So I'll give you, it gives you a little bit of time to think about it as well. And we'll come back after the break.
The AltJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Let AvStage make your vision a reality. As your trusted technical partner, we deliver top-tier lighting, cameras, sound, visuals, and all technical elements for high-level corporate events, conferences, gala awards, ceremonies, and year-end functions. Elevate your next event with our expert services. Contact AvStage at 011-887-1400 and let us bring your event to life and make it unforgettable.
Welcome back. You're listening to the AltJet Business Show. I'm David Zeidel, and together we're listening to Pablo Fatidis. He's the co-founder and CEO at Auric. At Auric, I think it's pronounced. And just before the break, Pablo was explaining to us kind of the different phases that we go through as we develop from being unconscious to more conscious. I've heard the term the Dunning-Kruger effect, which is more or less what he's explaining. And Pablo, he helps businesses to sweat, then scale, and then sell. And he works with businesses of about 15 people or more. And he works and has worked in the US, UK, Europe, Namibia, Australia, and South Africa. And he mentioned to me earlier that there's a big difference in South Africa between businesses in Joburg, Durban, and Cape Town. And we're going to get to that discussion a little bit later, how they're different. But just before we get that, and just before the break, we were talking about that if you're in the unconscious competence phase, where you're doing things, you understand what you're doing, if you haven't got that 5% doubt, then you're stuck there. And my question was, is there a name to the next phase, and where are we trying to head to, and should we always have that doubt?
You know, David, I'll tell you a lovely story. Someone who is trapped in it. Two lovely stories. The one fellow is based in Virginia. He's a client of ours. And the way that I came to meet him is his son-in-law called me one day and said, please come visit my father-in-law. And I said, why? I was in Chicago. This is way down south. And I said, what's up? And he says, my father-in-law is eroding our inheritance. I thought, okay, how does this work? And he says, well, I'm 60 years old. I married his middle daughter, who's 58. The youngest is the son, who's 54. And there's another sister, a sibling, who's about 61 or so. And my father-in-law has a steel fabrication business based out of Virginia, was doing about $98 million a year, 6-7 years ago, and it's now fallen to about $22, $23 million. Please come see him. So anyway, I was really curious about this. Hopped onto a plane, flew down to Virginia, and met with the father-in-law. He wouldn't talk to me about anything other than Lancaster bombers. And Lancaster bombers, he was fascinated by them, because his father-in-law flew Lancaster bombers and his father flew B-19s. And together they did the bombing processes across World War II and ended World War II more or less. So we spoke about this for about an hour and a half. And he said, thank you very much for meeting me. I hopped back on a plane, went back home to Chicago and thought, well, what was that all about? I then got a phone call saying, Charlie would like to meet with you again. And I said to his son-in-law, okay, but look, what are we going to be talking about this time? He said, please just come down. So I went back down and I met him at a restaurant privately. And he looked me in the eye and his eyes welled up with tears. To give you a sense, he was 82 at the time. And I said, what's up, Charlie? And he says, they don't understand. And I said, what don't they understand? And he said, if I sell the business Monday morning, 8 o'clock, I have no reason to get out of bed. Through this business, David, he had worked with government to try and improve policies. He had been at the biggest trade shows right around the United States. The One Balcony, I'm not sure if it's still there, given the most recent developments at the White House, was one that he had fabricated. He had helped youngsters come into the industry. He had written for the trade magazines. He had sat pro bono on the trade associations. And although he ground away 7 days a week, it gave him purpose. And that to me was a huge insight. When we start, most of us are driven by need. And need is a powerful energy. It is necessity. It's about creating economy, putting money on the table, feeding your family, a roof over your head. And it takes from start, typically around 15 odd years, to have all your needs met. And from there, you might move on to your wants. And if I look at my career, my history, I bought my first new car after I sold my former car, which was 15 years old. And I thought, you know, I deserve this. I deserve to buy a nice car. And I bought a nice car, as modest as it was new. And we have wants. And when you satiate your wants, a crisis emerges. Because what's driving you? And this is where the story of Henry Ford was just so apt. Because what drove Henry Ford was a far greater purpose. And the insight to where purpose comes from is so beautifully written in the Kabbalah, where it turns around and it says, the apex leaf which grows the tree is found at the tip, at the top of the tree, the highest point in the canopy. And it grows into the open skies. It sees the open skies as its domain and purpose to occupy. And if you can find a purpose that is far greater than you, you will always be uncomfortable with your success. You will always have that 5% doubt. And to me, it is the single most important thing that separates people who have accomplished and people who have soared well beyond average accomplishments.
Wow, that's an incredible story. Is it called the apex leaf story, or can I call it that? I think that's an amazing story. But what drives that person? Is it just because there's open sky and I have to move on? At what stage are you comfortable or not comfortable? At what stage do you grow into that open sky, or you say, I'm not going to grow anymore? And just on that, there's a little Yiddish story of a guy who's eating in a restaurant, and the waiter comes and he's sitting down, and the waiter says, are you comfortable? And he said, I'll make a living. And so that fits within the whole nuance of that. It's always looking at, I'm making a living, I'm comfortable. When is it good, or is it good always to have that level of uncertainty? And when do you know that it's destructive or not? If you've got 5% uncertainty, that's great. If you've got 55%, maybe it's not. And how do you judge
that? I would agree with that. You know, I think, honestly, comfort is like a cancer to the soul or to the brain. It eats away at it. It erodes you. And although the irony is we strive for comfort in life, when we attain comfort, we stop developing, we stop growing, we stop imagining, we stop believing, we stop acting. And in many ways, that comfort, I think, is a resignation of life. And it disempowers you. It feeds self-doubt. It feeds apprehension. It feeds all the aspects of what prevent us creating. And if you really think about it, David, what sets us apart? What truly sets us apart from all other mammals? It is the ability to create.
Yeah, wow. Excellent. And then if we're creating and you're looking at growing these businesses, and you help a lot of businesses, as I said, around the world in many different countries, and then specifically talking South Africa, when I spoke to you previously, you said you work in Joburg and in Durban and in Cape Town, and you made a comment that surprised me, and you said, they are very different.
They certainly are.
How are they different, and what can you put that attribute to on why they're different?
You know, I have a lot of people come to South Africa from different parts of the world. They do business here. I invite them here. I meet them. They invite me there. We have a very, very active engagement. And when they land, they say, well, how does it work in South Africa? And I say, look, they're more or less kind of three main centers. You have Durban, Cape Town, and Johannesburg. And they said, well, what's the difference? I said to them, look, in Cape Town, people will ask you, how long have you had your money for? In Johannesburg, they will ask you, how much money do you have? And in Durban, they'll ask you, where did you get it? And culturally, it really captures the essence of those three environments. But what makes it especially interesting at the moment is the history of the last, I'd say, 3 years, 4 years of how each of these provinces, in effect, have evolved. In Durban, we had massive floods. We had terrible riots. The fabric of society was absolutely torn and fragmented and shattered. 50% of the businesses, more or less, that got paid out didn't rebuild. Many stayed behind. And today, when I look at Durban-based businesses on a peer-to-peer basis, they are larger, substantially so, than Johannesburg and Cape Town-based businesses. If I look at Johannesburg-based businesses, they're slightly smaller than the Durban peer-to-peers, but they are going through deep, deep apprehension and strain. Their margins have fallen, they're tight, they are apprehensive to invest and act. And in Cape Town, everything in that peer-to-peer version is often centered around the lifestyle before the business itself. So three very different approaches, and you simply can't speak in the same way you do in one province to a business owner as you would in any of the others, because you break that relationship, you break that sense of you get me or you don't get me. And those sensitivities really do matter, especially in the work that I do.
And I think that goes down to, and correct me if I'm wrong, to businesses in general, in that you can't talk about, are you in a furniture business or you in a retail business? It's around that specific business. And within a business as well, you can't treat all your customers as if they're one group. Each customer needs to be treated for who they are.
They do. And you know, that's where the problem actually begins and possibly ends. If you are treating all your customers in the same manner, it's likely that you are selling on price. If, however, you've gone and segmented, in other words, put your customers into different groups and understood what the drivers of those groups are, what problems they seek to get solved through buying your service or product. To the extent that you've developed that level of empathy, then you can speak the four or five or six languages that matter to make customers that fit in those groups feel heard and understood. And what's remarkable about getting that right is when people feel heard and understood, then and only then, David, do they care to understand what you can do for them.
And when you talk about if you treat everyone as one, that then they're just competing on price, what do you call the other bit? Do you call it a focus strategy or differentiation strategy as opposed to just a cost strategy of price?
I refer to it as a scale-up strategy. And the word scale-up is interesting because scale-up effectively means, so if we go to when we start a business, the different phases we go through, when you start, honestly, you don't know what you don't know and you think you know everything. So when you do start the business, it's all about a hustle. Sell, sell, sell. Get money in, because if you don't get money in, you won't be there tomorrow. At some point in time, however, that becomes absolutely exhausting. If I'm selling a service to a bank, it's fundamentally different to selling a service to a big hotel, which might be fundamentally different to selling it to an industrial manufacturer of sorts. They all have problems expressed very differently and engaged and experienced very differently. It's an exhausting process. But once you've gotten to a point where you've got revenues coming into your business, 5, 7, 10 years later, the scale-up stage is where you turn around and say, hang on a minute. I can't be all things to all people, because in trying to be all things to all people, I've become everything to no one. And that's where you're competing constantly on price. If you sophisticate the business and prepare it for scale-up, you start to look at all your clients. You organize them into these buckets and say, which of my customers are birds of a feather that fit together? And how many different buckets of clients do I have? The next stage is to then say, where am I getting the most common or often repeat business? That becomes your priority bucket. And when you build a scale-up, you need a blueprint. It's when you build anything, a building, a ship, a car, call it what you will, a house. You need a blueprint. You need the architectural plan. An architectural plan is gotten by going to that grouping that you want to become expert at serving and understanding the problem You have to solve for them how the problem comes about for them. It builds that empathy, how they want to engage with you, how they behave around learning what you can do for them, how they make a buying decision, how they want to then be serviced, and what they need in order to be retained as a customer or client. It is a tricky process, but that creates a blueprint. And that blueprint is the experience that you become expert at delivering repeatedly. When you have that, you have the means, the architectural plan, the engineering plan to craft and create a commercial platform that drives the business, as opposed to you having to do it day in, day out, each time, every time.
Wow, and I find it quite interesting on what you said before, because talking as an individual, you said we have needs, and when those needs are satisfied, we then have wants, and then we go to our purpose. And from a business point of view, you kind of done something similar where you've said you sell, which would equate to your needs. You just need to be doing the sales. Your wants are your scale up, where you're sophisticated. And maybe your purpose is when you find that purpose of that specific business, where you find that niche that you are aiming at. And if you're listening
Very
to this,
so.
And if you're listening to this and you just got in your car and you're thinking, who's sprouting these unbelievable words of wisdom? It's Pavlo Fotidis. He's the co-founder of Auric and CEO of Auric. And he's taking us through years and years of experience in helping businesses grow and scale. And we're going to go for a break in a little bit. But Pavlo, when we come back, I'd like to ask you if you could give three tips for business success. What would those three key things be? But we'll do that after the ad break.
The AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Let AvStage make your vision a reality. As your trusted technical partner, we deliver top-tier lighting, cameras, sound, visuals, and all technical elements for high-level corporate events, conferences, gala awards, ceremonies, and year-end functions. Elevate your next event with our expert services. Contact AvStage at 011-887-1400 and let us bring your event to life and make it unforgettable.
Welcome back. I'm David Zeidel. You're listening to the AutJet Business Show. And together we're in discussion with Pavlo Fotidis, the co-author and CEO at Auric. And Pavlo, isn't it amazing? Like, I started a story saying, it's not that you fall in the water that matters. It's that you can swim afterwards. And then we have our technical issue that helps us really practice that in purpose, that we had an issue, a technical issue. So the commercial break was a little bit longer than it should normally be, but we're back online, so that's great. Pavlo, just before we ended, and by the way, anyone who's just turned on the radio and you're listening and you're thinking, well, who is Pavlo Fotidis? He helps businesses to sweat, to scale, and then to be able to sell it, working with many, many different businesses. And just before the break, I asked him to please give us three tips for business success. What would those three tips be that you could give us?
I think probably, you know, business really is a, building a business is a marathon. It's not a short hop and skip. Very, very few businesses actually successfully sell and exit. I'll give you an idea. Across the States, which remains, to my mind, still the most vibrant market for entrepreneurs and people interested in building businesses, simply because of the depth of the markets, the extent of the markets, the amount of money sloshing around, the risk-taking nature of people in the US, the celebration of the meritocracy around succeeding in a business, it's all celebrated. And in those environments, still, David, around 94.6% of companies start to close. And it's got nothing to do with age. I have a situation at the moment with a business based out of Atlanta. It's in its fourth generation. The fourth generation owner of the business is just over the age of 70. He put the business out to market. He could not fetch a price for it. So it's got nothing to do with duration. And I think there's a real lesson in that. It's so important, I believe, to have a vision of self. In other words, understand your own story arc. Where do you want to be based on where you are today? And where do you want to be based on where you will be after your business? And in that process, what is the job you want your business to do for you? Because if you hold that as an idea and you appreciate the fact that ever since you started the business, you've constantly had to invest in it. We've had blow after blow after blow depreciating our businesses here in South Africa and in many other parts of the world. To sustain that business, you've had to invest consistently. So set an intention to exit the business at some point in time. And in exiting the business, put a value to it, a value that will help you succeed the lifestyle you choose post that business. Look at where you are today, put a value to your business today. And the gap that sits in between, you can engineer growth and value in a business. You need to close that gap. And that needs to be the intention behind why you do what you do. The next thing is you do need to have a greater purpose. I profoundly believe if you don't love what you do and do what you love, it becomes incredibly hard to sustain a business. The challenges are relentless. More so now than ever before, we're finding ourselves in an environment where there are so many different elements of change occurring at once. That if you feel worn down, beaten down, if you feel full of self-doubt, well, welcome to the club. Everyone's feeling that way. If you believe in what you do and you have purpose behind why you do what you do, which goes beyond just simply making money, then you can sustain all these battles. And then I think the third thing, David, is your attitude becomes you. The way you choose to look at the world is the way that the world will manifest for you. There is so much competition for our attention, and that attention is designed to distract us, eat our time, make us helpless, make us vulnerable. I look at news cycles. I wake up at 4 o'clock every morning, and effectively, I go through 11 different newspapers or news brands to get a view from the left and from the right and from the center of the United States. I add Canada into the mix. I then move across to the UK. I go to France. I go to Germany. I go to South Africa. I then go to India. From India, I move across. There's really nothing of any value you can get out of China that's believable. But from there, I go to Australia. And, by around 6 o'clock, I've had a sense of what all the news is. I then set it aside and don't allow it to occupy any more of my time and attention. And the best way to then invest that time and attention is only on what you yourself can control. Because if you do that and you take the many, many, many small steps forward every day, where you put your full time and attention to progressing your path, it puts you in a position of enormous power. And I don't need to tell you, of all people, the power of compounding interest. If you think about 350, how many days in the year? 352, 354.
365, except a leap year.
365 days in a year. Thank
366.
you. 365 days a year. Compound that over 10 years. If each day is one small step forward in building your business into an asset that can be transferred over day, where you've been cognizant and empathetic with all the news around you, but chosen to put your time and attention on what you can control, you remain forever empowered. It is an attitude more than anything else.
It's interesting that you use that analogy of a year, because James Clear's got that book, Atomic Habits, which he talks about little
Yes.
habits. And in his book, he says, if you improve 1%, only 1% every single day, at the end of the year, you are more than 30 times more than what you were at the beginning of the year. And that's only 1%. And it's exactly what you're saying with the compounding effect. And if he says, I'll come to that in a second, but if you reduce it by 1% every day, he says at the end of the year, you're close to zero. Where did he get that from, so. Pavlo?
Aristotle. Aristotle was quoted saying something along these lines. He says, if excellence is a practice, it's your habits that then create the excellence. And I think he's absolutely right in saying excellence is not an event. Mm-hmm. It's everyday accumulative behavior. And it's very profound. You know, in 2012, I worked with a fantastic person. I really have been very, very blessed to meet some remarkable people. This fellow, if you saw him, David, he's cherubic. He's always smiling. He's very happy all the time. He makes about, in 2012, $13, $14 million clear.
Oh, that's a good reason. That's a good reason to be happy.
He's an angler. His business is made up of him and his wife. And he is the world's top freshwater bass angler. There are around 39 million registered anglers in America. 500 of them perform in 25 competitions a year. And you need to win 17 or more to attain the accolade of being the top bass pro fisherman. And he says, you know what, beyond growth mindset, I compete with people who are as skilled as me, as talented as I am. And I said to him, what sets you apart, Kevin? And he says, I have a winning mindset. I play the percentages. In the winter months when the lakes are frozen over, they're going on Caribbean cruises, they're relaxing from a stressful competitive season, they're binge watching Netflix. He says, I put my poor wife into an RV. We drive to the frozen lakes. We dig a hole in the ice. And I dive those lakes and mark on a marine map where I found the biggest bass hibernating. And he says, Pavlo, that's the difference between me and them. When we arrive at that competition, I already know where the biggest fish lie. And if the competition is about the biggest fish or the most fish, I know where the best spot is. That small percentage is what sets me apart. Because to earn $13, $14 million a year, you have to win each time, every time. It's an attitude.
That is remarkable. That's an incredible story. And it's like, if you want to catch fish, then fish where the fish are. And we all want to do that. But then it's about the data and the information and knowing where it is. And that's the extra work that someone like him would put in that most of us wouldn't. I'm starting to get the wrap-up sign from Craig to say, this is enough. I mean, if I was Craig, I'd like, go on. But and I just want to quote something that you said that stood out for me now in this last little segment. Is you said, excellence is not an event. It's a result. And we all want excellence. And I think we know it, that you can only achieve it if you do the work. But somehow we want to get, we think that excellence is just achieved without doing the work. And it's that compounding effect that you mentioned. So
it is. But David, here's the thing. If you want to be the best at what you do, if you want to attain excellence, it comes at a massive cost. And you need to be prepared to make that investment. It might be family time. It might be many other things. It comes at a cost. We live in a competitive world. And all you need is that 2-3%. But that 2-3% takes about 60-70% effort.
Wow, that's fantastic. And this interview for me, you spoke about the 3% takes 60%. For me, this interview has been like 120%. So I really... really want to thank you for the unbelievable insight to the business. And this has been Pavlo Fotidis, co-founder and CEO of Auric. And I love the name of his book the first one, Sweat, Scale and Sell, because that tells you exactly the process that you go through. This has been the Ortjet Business Show, and I'm David Zeidel, and we'll see you next week. The Ortjet Business Show is brought to you with the compliments of Avstage. Let them bring your corporate event to life and make it unforgettable.
Let Avstage make your vision a reality. As your trusted technical partner, we deliver top-tier lighting, cameras, sound, visuals, and all technical elements for high-level corporate events, conferences, gala awards, ceremonies, and year-end functions. Elevate your next event with our expert services. Contact Avstage at 011-887-1400 and let us bring your event to life and make it unforgettable.